Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast.
I'm pretty sure that camera tried to steal our soul. Were we really so elusive, or were we on a roll?
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Duncan Sheik has just released a new album. Now, you may be thinking, okay, so isn't that what a singer and songwriter is supposed to do? Well, yes, but Duncan Sheik had to squeeze this album in between a new version of his hit Broadway musical Spring Awakening and his theatrical adaptation of Alice in Wonderland and composing the score for the forthcoming Broadway musical American Psycho, among other theater projects. So Duncan releasing a new album is kind of a big deal. He's back in our Soundcheck studio today with his band to play some of these new songs, beginning with this one called Avalanche.
There's a wave of snow, it's coming down. Far below, it seems as if it barely makes a sound. And it doesn't love, it doesn't hate. It stands to deliver its inexorable fate. Dark blue sky and a pale white sun. When the ground beneath you shifts, it's too late to run. You might as well dive inside. Make a little room to breathe. Maybe she'll decide to let you live. A benefit of doubt that's hers to give. It's not just love or lust or sweet romance.
It's an avalanche.
That is the song Avalanche from Duncan Sheik live here in the Soundcheck studio. It's from his new album called Leisure Domain, and it brings Duncan back to Soundcheck. Great to see you again.
Great to see you too.
With Doug Yowell on drums and Jason Hart at our piano. Duncan's got his Prophet 6 synthesizer here. And, you know, when I first heard, first of all, got to say, that's my favorite song off the new
Sweet.
Record.
Great.
So thanks for doing that one. But when I first heard it, I was like, is he going to have like a live version where he shies away from those high notes, or is he going to go out there every night and go for them? Clearly, you're going for them.
So far, I'm going for them. We'll see what's happening at the end of the tour, but it's still there.
Yeah. So with all the many, I mean, I mentioned, I think, three of your music theater projects in the introduction. I could have gone on to like six or seven. So what's your day job now?
Well, I don't know which one I call my day job and which one is my night job. But you know, I've always kept touring at least a little bit to just kind of keep myself in practice. And this record was made kind of over the course of the past 5 years. Like, I started writing and recording it in 2010. So it was just, whenever I could find time in between these other theater things that were going on. And yeah, that was how it worked out.
Yeah. Does that affect a record when it's been made piecemeal as opposed to one sort of burst of creativity?
It definitely does. I mean, there was a version of this record that was finished in like 2013 that was cool. I mean, it sounded good, but it was, in a way, it was like, it was ye olde Duncan Sheik, or it could have been, I don't know. It sounded a little bit like a Fleetwood Mac album or something. I mean, which I love Fleetwood Mac, but it wasn't. I wanted to do something that was more modernist, so I had the opportunity to kind of take all the stems of all the recordings, deconstruct it, pull it apart, put it all into Ableton, chop it up, play with it, and then I was, you know, after that process of kind of remixing my own mixes, I felt much happier and more confident about what that was.
Ableton, for folks who aren't familiar, is a software program that allows a lot of kind of slicing and dicing. You can chop things up and...
Yeah, it's very deep programming. You can change keys and tempos. It kind of treats audio as plastic, and you can kind of do anything you want with it. And so the possibilities become endless, which can be sort of crazy-making, but eventually I got to a place where I was happy.
So, Leisure Domain. Mm. What is the sleight of hand at work here?
Well, you know, the first half of the record, you know, because it uses a lot of this technology, I think, and it's also, in some ways, this is my own kind of inverted pop music, or inverted electronic dance music. So I see that as having a certain amount of kind of, it has a mercenary quality to it, and a certain amount of like menace, and of course a certain amount of studio trickery that goes into it. And so I wanted to kind of put that, you know, on the front cover of the record. But also the second half of the record is much more internal and organic and acoustic, and it's played very quietly. So that was almost like the other meaning of sleight of hand, where it's just kind of a subtle thing that maybe has some other darker stuff inside it.
Yeah. So at this point, when you begin to write a song, do you know in advance whether it's going to be a Duncan Sheik album song or part of a larger theater piece?
That's a really good question. I mean, I a lot of times I'll sit down, whether it's at a guitar or at a piano or in front of the computer, and I'll make some music and I'll just kind of leave it alone for a minute. And then if there are, you know, if I have homework for a theater project, I'll pull up this kind of huge list of things, files that I've created, and see if maybe there's a match there. But most, I would say 70% of the time, I kind of know, like, oh, this is a theater thing and I have to write this song for this character at this moment in the narrative, and it's pretty clear what it needs to be. But sometimes I'll go in the files and find some stuff.
And of course, sometimes you're presented with the lyrics.
Exactly. And that's really great in a way, because I find lyrics so painstaking. But it's really nice to work with Steven Sater or Kyle Jarrow and just have these lovely words handed to me.
Now, you know, music and music theater have come together in your work. One of your previous visits was when you did Whisper House.
Yes.
Which was both a Duncan Sheik record and a music theater piece.
Exactly. Yeah, it was sort of, it was Sony released it, and we as a kind of a concept record, and then we did the show at the Old Globe in San Diego, and we had high hopes of it coming straight to Broadway, which didn't happen, which is, you know, not unusual.
Right.
But it is going to have another life up at Arts Emerson in Boston next fall, so that's cool.
Mm-hmm. So Leisure Domain is the result of all this work in and amongst these various music theater projects. And so it's tempting to look at each individual song as a kind of little story and to think, well, this is the impact of doing so much music theater. But of course, you've been telling stories all along, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I think one of the cool things about working with Steven Sater, for example, is that he doesn't mind being completely poetic and kind of enigmatic, which is very unusual for musical theater writers who tend to be more specific.
Because you have to move the song story along.
Plot driven. Yeah, so I think that for me, this has been great to write these lyrics because it's just I felt like I was much more opened up in terms of what I could write. And what I realized, like, after the fact is that a lot of these songs have these – and this was not intentional at all, but they all have this kind of, like, hippy-dippy, like, climate change kind of, you know, deep underlying subconscious, you know, fear that it's all going to, you know. So songs like Avalanche and even Selling Out, there's all these references to kind of nature in there. And it wasn't, like, conscious at all, but it's just kind of how it came out, and then I ran with it.
Yeah. Yeah. What about in this next song, Circling?
So Circling is... it's a song about another female singer-songwriter who shall remain nameless, and I just had an opportunity to write kind of a, you know, gosh, I'm a song that maybe was a little bit of a critique of what happened in our friendship, but it also became a kind of a critique of myself.
Sounds very theatrical.
Yeah.
let's hear another live performance. Duncan Sheik and his band are here with us on Soundcheck today. On Saturday, the 21st, they are performing at Carnegie's Zenkel Hall, and some of the cast members from both Spring Awakening and American Psycho may be joining the fun then. And then the next night, on the 22nd of November, Duncan is at Tarrytown Music Hall, just upstate in Tarrytown, New York, with Suzanne Vega. But here they are, live on Soundcheck. This song is called Circling.
The sky today is it's bloody gray. Questions. I heard the dodge. A made-up name. It's not a sin. The water from the grave. Like dust and burning skin. Did you think it was a straight line? Surprised to find it circling. You were having such a great time. Gravity.
a straight line. I was surprised to find it circling. I was having such a great time.
Nicely done. That is Circling, song from Duncan Cheek's latest record called Leisure Domain, in a live performance here in the Soundcheck studio with Duncan singing, playing the synthesizer, Doug Yowell on drums, Jason Hart at our piano. And, you know, I was asking you before, Duncan, how different it was writing for one of your records and for the theater. Of course, one of the big differences is when you're writing for the theater, you're writing for someone else to sing it.
Yes.
You know, these songs, you know you're going to be the person tasked with singing it.
Yes. What's really cool about it more is, like, for example, with American Psycho, where I get to write a song from the perspective of Patrick Bateman, and, you know, who is, you know, completely insane on
yes.
some level.
Yeah.
But also, it's a part of my, it's sort of, there's a, I think Rupert Gould, our director, he said that, you know, a lot of us who work on this project, we all have like a little bit of Patrick Bateman inside each of us. And it sort of, and so what's great about it is it allows you to kind of express that part of yourself, but in a way that doesn't, you know, injure anyone else. It just broadens the palette of what you can write about. And it allows, I think it allows for a little more of a sense of humor too, which is, because I think the singer-songwriter thing can be so relentlessly navel-gazing of, like, yeah. the white guy with an acoustic guitar who's singing about a girl who doesn't like him anymore. And, you know, I just, you know, at a certain point, I had enough of that.
So now it's your chance to write about a guy who's going to slice another guy's head off with a big knife.
Yeah, and, you know, and nonstop hilarity ensues.
So what's it like to hear your songs coming back at you from other voices? And especially, I want to especially ask you about the current version yeah. of Spring Awakening
sure.
with a half-deaf cast.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, in that case, I went, that show originated in downtown L.A. with the Deaf West Theater like a little over a year ago, and maybe a year and a half ago. And I went down to go see it without any kind of knowledge of whether it was good, bad, or otherwise. And this kind of young group of musicians and singers and hearing impaired and deaf actors put on this version of the show. And it sounded incredible. It was like one of the better sounding versions of the show I'd ever heard. And then by the time they came to Broadway and we had this amazing sound designer, it was like sounding, you know, they said, come in and help them with the stuff. I was like, there's nothing, I don't need to do anything. They've been playing this for a year. They sound great. And so for me, it was just this total joy and this kind of gift to see it on Broadway again so soon. What can I say? It was lovely.
Yeah. Now, there's a film version of Spring Awakening that's been in the works for a really long time.
I know. We're trying to do it. It's hard to make movies, full stop. It's especially hard to make musical movies. And we really want to get it right, but by hook or by crook. And there's very, you know, I mean, it's like, I can kind of count the really good musical movies on my one hand, you know, whether it's Dancer in the Dark or Cabaret, or, I mean, I would even put The Sound of Music in there, but they're few and far between, and they're hard to pull off.
Yeah.
So we really want to find the right director. We have some great producers, and I'm happy to be patient and to get the right team together to do it so that it's awesome.
It's not like you're sitting around waiting for phone calls.
No.
You know?
No.
So this year, was the 150th anniversary of Lewis Carroll, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. You did Alice by Heart a couple of years ago. Did that get mounted anywhere for the sesquicentennial?
Sort of. The National Theater has a program called Connections where they work with young actors, you know, in various high schools all over the UK. And they presented it at the National, which was a lovely experience, but we weren't really involved in it. It was kind of like it got farmed out and then and then you saw it. So now we've redeveloped it with Lear de Bessonnet, who's the director from the, you know, she works a lot with the public theater. She does a lot of the summer stage shows. And then, so Stephen, myself, Lear de Bessonnet, and Jesse Nelson, and the book writer, we're going to workshop it at MCC here in December with, you know, with the hopes that it will have a production at MCC kind of next year. But, you know, theater projects take forever to develop, which is why you always have to have so many of them and all these irons in the fire. And Alice, we've been working on since 2007 or 2008, but I think now it's finally going to see the light of day.
Okay.
Good.
Well, so next year is the other thing about having many irons in the fire is sometimes you end up pulling out like two, three irons at once.
At once, yeah.
And so American Psycho begins previews in February. And talking before about how there have been moments in your career where the musical and the music theater have intersected, your album covers 80s, the covers of the 1980s, and American Psycho. Those seem to be in one another's pocket, so to speak.
Yeah, there was a nice kind of coincidental thing that happened. When I started working on American Psycho, I had already started working on the 80s covers record. And I knew I wanted the American Psycho score to be essentially electronic. So there was a lot of stuff that was kind of feeding into my renewed love of analog synthesizers and drum machines and then newer technology like Ableton. So it was really fun to kind of get into this using the technology again, really like I did when I was 15 and 16 years old.
And when Bret Easton Ellis was writing the novel.
Exactly. So all my, you know, my big bands that I loved were Talk Talk and Depeche Mode and New Order and, you know, the usual suspects, Japan. And so this was a great opportunity for me to play with those toys.
I will say quickly, Japan is not one of the usual suspects. You had to dig a little deeper to get to Japan.
I understand, but also David Sylvian has like been a huge touchstone for me, you know, kind of through ever since I've started making music. So and I sort of feel like his trajectory, I've pretended to follow his trajectory where like I started out doing really pop music and then I kind of wandered off into these more avant-garde places. Maybe not as avant-garde as he has, but I aspire to be David Sylvian.
The Englander who became a New Englander.
Exactly.
So this next song, this is not an exit. This is one of the American Psycho songs.
It is.
And so largely electronic.
Well, yeah, there is some piano in here, and Doug is going to play drums, so we're cheating a little bit. But I think you'll hear some synthesizers in there as well.
All right, let's hear a little bit from the music theater piece called American Psycho, based on the Bret Easton Ellis novel of that name. American Psycho is coming to Broadway next February. It begins previews, and we're going to hear this song now called This Is Not an Exit.
Maybe this schism is just a symptom of late capitalism. Saviors died and risen, worlds that wouldn't listen. Thank you.
Duncan Sheik with his song This Is Not an Exit. That is one of the songs from American Psycho coming to Broadway, beginning previews next February. And I have to guess, Duncan, that that comes, I'm going to guess, pretty late in the show when a lot of things have happened.
Yes, it's, that's the closer.
Wow. So Spring Awakening is running now on Broadway in this splendid production with the Deaf West Theater Group. American Psycho is coming out next February on Broadway in previews. Saturday night, Duncan, is at Zenkel Hall. It's November 21st, so Saturday the 21st. Some of the cast from both shows.
Yeah, I think Jen Damiano from American Psycho and a Spring Awakening alum. Kimiko Glenn is going to come. Who else is coming? Lauren Pritchard from the original cast of American Psycho of Spring Awakening. Mm-hmm. One of those shows. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
And then the next night, November 22nd, up in Tarrytown for a concert at the Tarrytown Music Hall with Suzanne Vega.
Yes.
And for folks who are listening, who came to this podcast to hear Duncan Sheik and heard you and were wondering who this David Sylvian guy you mentioned is, go check out his album, Secrets of the Beehive.
It's an amazing classic. Agreed.
Great to see you again.
Great
Thanks so much
too.
For playing for us.
Thanks, John.
summer's wound down. I'm in Birmingham. The day cleared up. It's pretty grand.
By the way, we shot video of today's session. Find it at soundcheck.org. And if you subscribe to WNYC's YouTube channel, we'll update you every time we post new videos. That does it for this installment of the Soundcheck podcast. Thanks for listening.
My flat and think of maybes and mites. Been a long time coming just to get to here. If it comes this easy, you don't shed a tear.
Do what we can.